The Fern Line is supported by the Alaska Rock Gym, providing quality indoor climbing to the Anchorage community since 1995. Alaska Rock Gym sports 20,000 square feet of climbing, an entire floor of boulder terrain, beautiful locker rooms, plus expanded cardio fitness and yoga rooms. Stop by anytime to take a tour of the facility or check out the Alaska Rock Gym online at alaskarockgym.com.
Hey, Evan, did you hear that?
Dude, it's a hoarding marmot. Looking for that last-minute piece of kit before heading into the hills? Make sure and stop by the Hoarding Marmot, Anchorage's finest outdoor consignment shop located in the heart of Spinard. The Hoarding Marmot has everything you need from high-end mountaineering gear, cross-country and downhill ski equipment, as well as a fine selection of local guidebooks, maps, and yummy trail snacks. Stop by the Hoarding Marmot next time you roll through town or check them out online at hoardingmarmot.com. All right, let's get to the show. Hey friends, I'm Evan Phillips, and you're listening to The Fern Line, a podcast about the lives of mountain climbers. On Season 3, I continue my chats with alpinists and other outdoor enthusiasts who are pushing the limits of creativity in the mountains and in their daily lives. My goal is to have meaningful conversations with extraordinary people, the folks who choose to live full-value lifestyles in some of the most beautiful and wild regions on the planet. All right, well, it's great to be back with you for another episode of The Fern Line. Hey, before we dive in, I have a few announcements. First, after 3 years and many requests, The Fern Line now has an official online store with t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, coffee mugs, as well as my solo music catalog. So if you want to check it out, just head on over to thefernline.com and click on the shop tab. And right now, Fernline listeners can save 15% on their first order when they enter discount code THEFERNLINE, all one word, during checkout. Hey, if you want to help support The Fernline from the ground up, the best way to do that is to become a monthly subscriber over on Patreon. Patreon backers get early access to ad-free episodes, bonus content, plus stickers and merch. But more than anything, the Patreon page ensures that this podcast remains a viable endeavor for me moving forward. It really helps a lot. So thanks to all the current Patreon backers. And if you want to become a Patreon subscriber, just head on over to patreon.com/thefernline. Other ways you can help out are to leave a review over at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can tell someone directly. Word of mouth is the best way to get information out there. And it also helps promote the grassroots vibe I'm going for. And finally, if you do the social media thing, you can follow The Fern Line on Instagram and Facebook, and even Twitter if you want to go there. And I'll try my best to keep everything about climbing. All right, so with that, it's time to grab your favorite beverage in your new Fern Line coffee mug and get cozy on your couch or camp chair and settle in for this episode of The Fern Line.
Get like these just balls of grief in my chest, and I wouldn't really know what to do with it. And I would sit at the piano and I would just continue to play until that ball felt like it was unraveling.
You remember picking berries from the bowl.
Have you ever been on a path where it seemed like everything was lining up the way it should be? Things were going smooth, your life felt perfect. And then one day, seemingly out of the blue, something happened and everything changed. What once felt comfortable suddenly felt unstable. What once felt like solid ground now felt like falling through space. As climbers and outdoorsy folks, we pride ourselves on being strong, both physically and mentally. We're high achievers that see in mountain faces and blank walls problems that need to be solved. But at the end of the day, we're all human beings. Not every problem can be solved. And sometimes what's most important is being able to look in the mirror and say, today's the day to make some changes. Remember fishing off the dock. In some ways, this is what my conversation with climber, skier, and musician Kirsty Getty was about. We talked about her recent decision to walk away from a stable career in the outdoor industry, how music and songwriting helped her navigate through overwhelming grief, and what it means to give yourself permission to simply be who you are. That's today on The Fern Line. So where are you at right now?
Right now I'm in Golden, Colorado. I'm in the basement of my friend Quinn and Sarah's. I moved here a couple months ago and it's pretty perfect. I think coming from Washington, it's so rainy, especially through the course of the winter in Washington.
Right.
In Seattle specifically, that I think I grew up in Washington, so I didn't really know anything that there was other life with sunshine.
Yeah.
So well, it was really nice to move out here. And I'm in the basement. It's a little bit cooler. It's been really sunny and hot this summer. So the basement is cool. I've got my piano right here close to my bedroom. And yeah, it's really ideal.
So what brought you out to Golden?
A temporary job. So I applied and got into school that starts at the end of September. And I quit my job with outdoor research in early January. I think I was pretty burnt out on just the outdoor industry. And right. I knew that I had this passion for music that I wanted to go out and explore further. And at the time when I quit my job, I hadn't gotten into school yet, and it was a pretty big leap.
Right.
I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I just knew that I couldn't continue doing what I was doing, and I wanted to approach full-heartedly, start pursuing music in some different ways.
Right. Can I ask you some questions about your time
totally.
At OR?
Yeah. Oh, of course.
So, I mean, that's actually how I met you a couple years ago. That's how we got connected. Can you talk about how you ended up getting into that job with OR and what you did for them and how long you were with OR?
Yeah, I was with OR for about 5 years. And actually, so I went to school in Seattle to SBU. And right out of school, I just needed a job. And there was a position open with the retail store at OR headquarters down like next to the stadiums downtown. And I was like, OR seems like a cool company. I'd been working for this other company through college called Outdoors for All, working with kids and adults with disabilities and like teaching climbing and skiing. And we had used a bunch of their gear. A lot of the participants had a bunch of their gear.
Right.
I didn't really know a lot about OR, but I was like, and they make some like pretty good gaiters, I think. And I'm pretty sure I've got like a pair of their gloves that are really decent. So maybe I should look into working for the retail store for a little bit just to like start being able to pay back student loans.
Right.
And it was a pretty quick process. I think I sent in a resume and they called me the next day. And then the day after that, they were like, yeah, you're a girl, you like to do outdoors things, this is a perfect fit. We need more women.
Nice.
I don't think they said that exactly, but right. That was the gist of it. So I was working in the retail store for a year, and then they needed some extra help in customer service. I think at that time they had a super small, I mean, this was like, this was like 6 or 7 years ago. There's like 3 people total working in customer service.
Wow.
Or no, 2 people. I was the third person.
Wow.
My coworker was the first person to do an online, or like complete an online order, like direct to consumer with OR. So that you can see this, they've grown a lot in the last 5 years, and it was really cool to be a part of. So I stayed in customer service for about another like year and a half, and then I got moved into dealer services. So I was servicing all of our West Coast, East Coast, and some of the Midwest brick and mortar accounts, a lot of order management and preseason order management, and some data entry and some like a little like some entry level data analysis. And then I went in dealer services. Actually, this gal, Jeannie Wall, was contract product developer for us. And I had met her originally in the retail store and kind of latched on to her. I was like, this woman is rad.
Yeah, she's been around for a while, huh?
Yeah, definitely. And like has been a prolific athlete in a lot of different things and is a really good product designer. So I started talking with her a little bit more, and she pulled me into this focus group, this like athlete focus group that they were having. And we talked around in a circle about our women's product line. And I remember, I think it was like Margaret Wheeler was in the room, and Molly Baker, who was one of our skiers, and Jeannie, and maybe a couple other gals, and all of us kind of saying the same thing of like, we're making like decent women's product, but we could do it a lot better. And we're actually not really marketing to women in a very good way. Like, we're not really utilizing a lot of women in our photography, in our films, and we could be doing that a lot more. And it could be a pretty fun, empowering thing for women to see more women in our media and to make better women's product.
Right.
So I started, after coming away from that meeting, I emailed our marketing manager and I said, hey, I really want to be continue to be involved with this. This is something I'm really passionate about, and I would love to meet on a regular basis with like whatever group comes out of this to help start to create some initiatives to this. And so I started meeting on a weekly basis with one of the marketing managers, and we would get together once a week and just kind of brainstorm, okay, how can we better market to women, and how can we better make women's product? And we pulled in a couple more people, a gal from product development, and then another gal from marketing who managed some of the athlete team and the events. We started continuing to meet on a regular basis, and came up with some good inspiration from the outdoor industry at the time. We came up with this 2 times a year, this kind of women's takeover month called She Adventures. And that was kind of the platform of how we were trying to better empower women through like social media and through marketing. We would send out an article every month that was written by a woman, not necessarily like for women, but written by a woman author. And then some various like Instagram challenges, and then a big scholarship that varied from year to year. 1 year it was a scholarship to go climb with one of our athletes at the time, Sarah Hunikin, in the Bugaboos, like a whole week-long alpine skills course with her. And then another year it was scholarship to go to the International Climbers Fest that they and a friend and take a bunch of climbing clinics. And another one last year was a scholarship for an alpines course with our athlete Jess Baker, climbing the Grand Teton, and an alpine course for that. We would pay for like travel and hotels and whatnot there, and give them a full kit and this full educational experience. At the time I was working in dealer services, right? So this is all like helping out with a passion project. And I wasn't really like servicing all of our dealers was a lot of fun, certainly. And I worked with really great people, but that was really what was keeping me at the time. It was being able to be involved with some like a greater project. That's something I was super passionate about. And along this came some different focus groups that we put together that were not just with our athletes, but we did some concentrated focus groups at some of these different climbing festivals and a local focus group in Washington where we just brought a bunch of women together and asked them what was wrong with our product and what was right and what they liked about different product from other brands and what they saw the biggest gaps in the industry or where they saw the biggest gaps in the industry and tried to learn as much as we could about making better product. And then my friend Ashley, who is in marketing, she moved to another company and that opened up a position in marketing. And I interviewed and ended up getting the job. And then, so then I was managing some of the athlete team and managing all of the event sponsorship. And that's what probably led me to meeting you.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun. It was fun to be kind of in the thick of things. It was a lot of traveling, but I could continue to have a heavy hand in the She Adventures program and then try to make some differences within our athlete program and direct our event sponsorship towards some events with some like really meaningful impact, like Shelma's Flash Foxy event and trying to work with different event coordinators to create some really inclusive opportunities at these different festivals. And
cool.
Yeah, it was rewarding and a great time and certainly meaningful.
I guess I'm curious, like, what are some of the biggest changes that you have seen in the outdoor industry since when you first got into it and when you just kind of left OR, which it sounds like was about a 5 or 6 year period?
I mean, besides product technology, obviously there's a massive influx of climbers in general. Climbing gyms have become, I feel like, a lot like there's as many as like CrossFit gyms, it feels like.
Right.
And there's data to back that up too, that, I mean, it's exploding, and with having climbing in the Olympics too, it's only going to progress. And there's all sorts of different types of gyms. There's training climbing gyms. And I think there's a much higher concentration in like sport climbing and gym climbing in general. And that eventually as people get more into like basics of climbing and want to improve their skills and want to seek and explore more climbing, I think more people will continue to get into some more technical climbing, like more trad climbing, more alpinism. Yeah, and I guess another thing that has changed in even like so dramatically in the last 5 to 6 years have been this huge concentration in inclusivity in the outdoors.
Right.
That was definitely not there, you know, probably like 15 to 20 years ago.
Right.
And there's still a long ways to go. But that's it's been really, really cool to see that and to try to dabble a little bit in that and to see all sorts of these different user groups coming in and getting psyched on climbing and getting psyched on the outdoors and being able to have the outdoor industry listen to that and be able to react to that and create space and opportunity for all sorts of this different demographic to thrive in the outdoors. Again, it's got a long ways to go, and I'm by no means any expert in this area, but it's been cool to see, and I know that it's going to continue to be something that changes in the future in a pretty dramatic way.
Yeah, very cool. I'm glad we got to touch, you know, on that stuff. I'm glad you got to share about the things that you were doing with OR and how passionate you were about it. And I think I knew that before I asked you about it, but
yeah, it was a really cool company to work for. I felt like I kind of entered into it in a really nice time.
Right.
It's small enough where you could kind of have your hand in so many different projects and really like pop over to product development and ask them questions and they ask you questions and actually like be able to make some change with the way that they're able to be so nimble, but yet have such a large impact because they are becoming a larger company. So yeah, it was pretty cool to be able to utilize it as a platform for some bigger things, I think, too.
Cool. Go ahead and talk about the transition that you've been making. I mean, that's one of the main things. I mean, obviously, like, I'm kind of interested in your life from afar because I've watched you making this transition, but I really want to hear more about it.
Yeah, so I think it all started maybe a couple years ago. I went through a kind of a messy divorce and experienced a lot of grief and some depression. And thankfully, I was. And one thing that's really nice, I feel like, about the outdoor industry is that your colleagues inevitably end up becoming your close friends because you're pretty passionate about the same things and kind of have some similar values. And I was lucky to have a close community at work that was really supportive during that time. And that's when I really started to, I think, concentrate a little bit more and start using music as therapy. I grew up in a pretty musical household. My mom's a music teacher and my dad is kind of the vocals of the family. And we grew up making a Christmas CD every year. That was... Most families send a Christmas card, but we did both. Mom would either write songs, like different Christmas songs, or rewrite modern songs to fit like something that happened during that year. Or we would like sing classic Christmas songs, and then we'd send, it used to be a tape, and then we would send a CD to all of our friends and family for the holidays. And I would begrudgingly do it, but now obviously I'm very grateful to have like 29 years worth of
wow.
family CDs. So I'd always been a bit passionate about music. And I think sometimes what happens when I got married, I started concentrating on a lot of other things, and I didn't really know that was such a massive part of me or my passions and my soul. And I kind of let it go for a good 5 years. And then I moved to a house that had a piano. I was house sitting for some friends, and I would get like these just balls of grief in my chest, and I wouldn't really know what to do with it. And I would sit at the piano and I would just continue to play until that ball felt like it was unraveling. And so sometimes it would be like, I should be at work, and it's like 8:30. I'm like still at the piano, still like playing, and like knowing that, okay, I like need to go now, but I also just, I couldn't stop playing and until it was like, That ball was gone from my chest. So it was at that time that I started to become really, really curious about, okay, well, like what's going on with my brain and what's going on inside of me when I play piano that brings about this kind of disposition. And I started reading some books like This Is Your Brain on Music, and started watching some documentaries and trying to look up like different research articles on your brain and creativity in music, and found some different programs at different universities, or mainly concentrated in the UK, but that had programs in this exact thing. I continued to be curious about what was going on and just keep playing. And I recognized in myself that like this is something that I am really passionate about, and I think that it's here for the rest of my life, and I need to pay attention to it because it does bring me such great joy, and it really it's kind of the fire for me in a lot of different ways. That I mean, I get home from work and I'll play piano, or if I've got a little bit of extra time in the morning, I'll play, and it's often something that I do before I go to bed too. And I kind of like to, having housemates, I play a little bit before bed, and I get a little bit of joy in being able to share music with my housemates and friends. And they've said that they enjoy it when I lull them to sleep. And so I kind of like that aspect of being able to share it with other people. I've spent a lot of time just using it for myself. And I don't know, I did an open mic like last fall for the first time. And it was really fun to share my music with other people. That's not something I do a ton. Maybe like close friends, I'll like, and sometimes you, I'll share like a song I've been working on. But I don't really like play out in venues or like put on shows or anything.
Right. So have you always been a songwriter? Because I know that you are, because you've sent me some stuff in the last 6 months. Like you'll send me demos or, songs that you're working on. And I've noticed a progression in your songwriting.
Yay, that's good to hear.
Yeah. But have you always been a songwriter, or is this, and I'm talking about like, writing songs and then writing lyrics and singing as well.
Yeah. Yes and no. When I was young, my mom would work with each of us to like help us write songs. And in middle school, I think I wrote my first song. It was a dedication to Martin Luther King Jr. And I wrote it for this project. It was supposed to be a poetry project. And I performed it for our middle school news station. And then I was like so embarrassed by it that it wasn't good enough, right, that I just about cried the day that they were going to air it. And I think that really put a hamper on my songwriting development. Yeah. I didn't really write a lot after that. And then it wasn't, I guess I've written a lot of poetry over the last few years, but it wasn't until like 2 years ago that I really started writing songs, writing on the piano without words, and then combining songs and words together. I shared with you that song, Grief, and that's the song that I wrote when I had that ball of grief in my chest. And I wanted the notes of the piano to match how I was feeling. And then the words kind of came with that. So I would say that that's probably like the first real song that I've written. Besides, I wrote this song called Raisin Toast about my love for Raisin Toast.
Nice.
I guess I wrote that song before I wrote Grief.
So you've talked about, obviously there's an emotional connection for you in your songwriting, but like what is your songwriting process? And I'll give you an example for myself. I mean, I've always been kind of a melody person. Like I'll have like a melody that kind of gets stuck in my head, and sometimes it'll be in there for weeks or months. I'll just kind of find myself like humming that melody to myself. And then there will be kind of an emotion that I associate with that melody over time.
Mm.
And then I guess just, sometimes I'll just be like, okay, well, I'm going to sit down and try and write something. And then I'll kind of hum out sounds or like syllables or like the way I want to enunciate words, but the words kind of form, it's like the last thing to come for me. And I was curious to hear like what your songwriting process is like.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of all over the place for me. Sometimes there's a poem that I've written that evokes some emotion, that it starts out with the words, and then I try to kind of figure out how to match that feeling with music. Sometimes it's like I'm about to go to sleep and this like little like dance of notes comes to my brain and I can't like get rid of it, and I've got to like record it down in a voice memo or else I'll forget it by the next morning. And then the next day I listen to it and kind of it feels a little bit like an iceberg or like a uncovering a little buried treasure or something, that there's like a little snippet of it that I can see. And then I start playing it in the piano and kind of like digging away at the sides, and all of a sudden there's other notes that go along with the main melody, and then there's like a bridge, and then I've found the chorus, and it's all a bit of like, feels like an archaeology dig or something, that it's there, but I'm just like uncovering it in some different ways by playing around with the main notes that I heard in my head.
I wanted to touch on because we kind of skipped over it, but you got accepted into, is it a graduate program?
Yeah, it's a master's of science in essentially like music cognition. It's a mix between music cognition and psychology and neuroscience.
And are you going to be going to school in Colorado or elsewhere?
So this program is in London. It's called Goldsmiths. It's an affiliate of the University of London. But I was all set to go, but I am thinking actually right now that I want to spend a year here and be able to get completely stable, like physically, emotionally, and financially before I head over the big pond. So I can defer for a year. So originally I was going to leave end of, or I guess like middle of September, but I'm looking at next year doing it instead.
Good for you. You're like totally like prioritizing self-care.
Yeah. I mean, I've spent a lot of life not doing that and wanting to do all of the things at one time. And inevitably that makes me sick and unhealthy. So I'm slowing it down a little bit.
Good for you. Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're in a good place right now. So,
yeah,
I mean, you know, that's like the number one lesson of my 40s is like my mantra is like, just follow your instincts, you know, like listen to yourself. And I don't always follow my instincts, but I'm getting better at it. And it seems like most times, 90%+ of the time, it's always the right decision, you know, like when you listen to your gut.
Oh, yeah. And I think there's such a high concentration now with being able to see what everybody's being involved with. And this, I've got like this little achiever in me that like wants me to go out and achieve all of the things in a short amount of time. And it's so easy to fall into that. I think, especially now more than ever, with everybody kind of presenting their best selves on social media and all of this FOMO, right? That I'm a pretty stubborn person too. That I get this idea in my head and I really don't want to give up on it until it's done. So I've been learning a lot about that the last couple of years. About it's okay to like. I mean, a lot of times we have these passions in us and these goals that they don't need to be achieved tomorrow. Nobody is telling us to go out and like do everything today and tomorrow. Like these are really just like goals that we've imposed on ourselves that it's okay to take a year. It's okay to take a couple years. It's okay to, that passion is going to be there. And yeah, we can make actions to kind of start chipping away at it now, but we got to listen to our bodies and what's going on here and now and be a bit, able to be adaptive in these things and know that it's okay that I won't do it this year, but and it's there next year.
I mean, it sounds like it might be a fluid process for you going to school in London, but do you have like kind of an end game goal for going to school there? And does it like tie into like a future career down the road?
In some ways, I would love to contribute to research in specifically like how playing music in a group or writing music helps with emotional processing and kind of looking at that from a cross-cultural perspective. I think it's so fascinating the way that music is ingrained in every single culture and in so many different ways, right? Like, when I think about the way that that grief sounds to me, can look very different in the way that grief sounds in remote hills of Mongolia for a group of people out there.
Right.
And I'm so interested in learning like what, if there are similarities and what are the differences. And as I think, I mean, music is one of these things that like we all listen to it. It's involved in our everyday lives. And yet we still don't know. There's so much that we don't know about it, that it's like this massive mystery. And in some ways, it's been described as like a very emotional language, like the language of emotion. And in so many different religious groups, music is used to bring people together and to share an experience together. And science has shown that it actually brings that that community closer together. It bonds them together. And I want to know what's going on in the brain, and with better access to, I think, like fMRI scanning and all the technologies that allow us to look into the brain. And all of a sudden we can really start looking and seeing what is going on with creative expression and with music, and what is it doing to the brain. And yeah, I guess it's a lot of insatiable curiosity, but also I think it'd be really cool to continue to do some research, but also to be able to work. I've been working as a data analyst, and to be able to put like meaningful data, I mean, with like Spotify streaming and Google Music, and we have access to so much data that can tell us
right.
a lot about how people are consuming music, and
right.
Really also give us like a snapshot in, I think, into like the emotions of different cultures by like what they're listening to or what they're producing. And so, yeah, I don't know, it'd be really cool to work in like as a data analyst for a music company and or like in a think tank. And I don't know.
Well, one thing that we haven't really touched on, and this is going to be one of those episodes that's not really centered around climbing or outdoor stuff, but I'm curious to hear, you know, how that part of your life, you know, inspires you, and what are some things that you really enjoy doing in the mountains, and how is that a part of your life?
Yeah, well, actually, there's a couple of ties in. I think going back to that song, Grief, it was not only grief from my divorce, but also there were some friends that had died in the mountains the last year, the last few years prior to that. And so it's kind of a mix of all sorts of different griefs that, and I had some friends that were going into the mountains and me just being like scared for them and the risks that they were taking. And I think being in the mountains, climbing and skiing and mountain biking are kind of my top three most favorite things to do. Spending time in the mountains with friends is definitely what helps fuel my energy mentally and physically. And I think it will continue to be this, given this take that it'll continue to fuel music, whether it's the relationships that I'm building in the outdoors or being taken by like a gorgeous mountain setting that helps inspire some songwriting. And
right.
it'll continue to be one of the fuels for the fire.
Yeah.
And certainly living in Colorado, a major draw to coming out here is it's in Golden, you're pretty close to I-70. I've been spending a lot of time in Carbondale, Colorado, kind of close to Aspen. There's some really beautiful mountains out there. I've kind of fallen in love with Sopris, which is very reminiscent of Mount Rainier growing up in Washington. And my family is a very musical family. It's also a very outdoorsy family, and we've spent a lot of time together out in the mountains. And I continue to see that that's definitely going to be a huge component of my life. Especially, I think I get excited about staying here for a year and being able to concentrate on music here, but also being able to play a lot out here. There's a lot of really great mountains, a lot of really good skiing, a lot of really good climbing, and certainly I've gotten a little bit more into trail running. I like did cross country in high school, but I kind of gave it up for some other things. And
yeah.
It's been really fun to reinvigorate some of those passions. I was talking about, I got kind of burnt out on the outdoor industry or the outdoors in a way this last winter. It was the first winter that I didn't really ski very much, and that's completely unlike me. And then I got out here, and it was like they were having their winter was starting over again. The snowpack was at like 300%. So
wow.
I was psyched. I got, even though I didn't have a winter in Washington, I had like a very prolonged spring season out here. And it was a lot of fun to kind of rekindle my love for skiing and do it in a less of a burnt out scenario. I actually started to feel the passion again for skiing and for spending time in the mountains. And it's a good place out here. I love Washington. I'll probably eventually go back to Washington, but Colorado's pretty Coloradical.
All right, well, thanks for hanging out with me today. I hope you got as much out of Kirstie's story as I did, and I hope you can apply some of her life wisdom to your own experiences in the mountains or in the city. Original music today is by Kirstie, and one of these days, I'm going to convince her to record an album so she can share more of her songs with you and the rest of the world. Hey, don't forget to leave a review for The Fernline on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you check out our new store on the website. And if you want to support the podcast from the ground up, remember, you can become a monthly subscriber over at patreon.com/thefernline. All right, well, thanks for listening, friends. Take care of yourselves, and we will catch you next time on The Fernline.